Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized, and with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com, that's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Welcome to the Casting Across Fly Fishing Podcast. I'm Matthew of castingacross.com, where I explore the quarry and culture of fly fishing. Here on the 287th episode of the podcast, we're going to be talking about topwater trout fishing, and I don't mean dry flies. I'll explain what the difference is here in a minute. But before I do, I did want to remind all of the listeners that a couple episodes from now, we will be doing a fly fishing accusations podcast. And that comes down to me answering questions, responding to comments, and maybe even defending myself to accusations or apologizing, backtracking because of an accusation that's made. But more often than not, the comments that I get are great questions about gear, about fishing tactics, or about clarification or expansion on something I've said either on the podcast or on the website. So definitely let me know, Matthew at castingacross.com, or go ahead and use that contact page over on the website. So topwater trout, what are we talking about? Well, again, like I already mentioned, we're not talking about dry flies. Now, when you think of fly fishing, there's a very good chance that the bucolic image of a little Catskill-style dry fly drifting along a smooth pool being sipped by a discerning trout is the first thing that comes to mind. I know that for me, if I had my way, I would be catching trout on dry flies 99% of the time. The 1% is there just to keep my other skills fresh. But I absolutely love fishing for trout using dry flies, and that requires a couple of things to happen. First and foremost, the fish need to be looking up for most dry fly fishing. Secondly, you need to have a very finesse presentation and a wonderful, nice, dead drift. You want that bug to look very natural. And so because of that, you can't always catch fish on dry flies. You can certainly try, and you never know, that right fish might find that right fly at that right place at that right time. But more often than not, you're waiting for the fish to be actively feeding in a way that's observable before you start throwing out those dry flies, whether they be stoneflies or caddisflies or mayflies or some sort of generic attractor pattern. But there's another way you can fish on top, and not only in the times we're talking about now with dry fly fishing, but at times when fish aren't actively rising and they may entice strikes. And it's a different way to approach trout, and it's not necessarily the most common, but for those who have done it and who've experienced it, it is a lot of fun, and it's worth talking about. And we're talking about legitimate topwater techniques. So when we think of topwater fishing, you take your brain out of the fly fishing world, what do you think of? Well, I mean, for me, I think of throwing a big, chunky frog pattern for bass, not even fly fishing, using my conventional gear, a bait casting rod or a spinning rod, and throwing out a hula popper or a scum frog or something like that, and jerking that thing around lily pads and weed beds. or maybe even throwing a buzz bait and having that thing rip across the surface of a lake in the late summer sun, and waiting for big bass to aggressively come up and strike those lures. I mean, that's what I think of when I think of topwater fishing. And you can take a lot of those tactics and apply them to trout in rivers as well. And it's not, again, the most popular way of fishing, but it certainly is productive. And one of the exciting things about it is a way to target the apex predators in any ecosystem. You're not going to get a ton of 6, 8, 12-inch fish going after flies that you present in this way. You're going to be getting the largest fish that are out there. And I'll maybe mix in a couple of anecdotes to illustrate that. But I guess just the first one that I would say is that I'll backtrack again. You know, here's an accusation you could make. I've fished in these tactics on small streams where I know there's big fish that are cagey and that are wary and that are looking for a big meal. And I fished some of these tactics on some small mountain streams, and I've turned up those 12 and 14-inch fish, those brook trout. But in those ecosystems, those are the big guys, and they're going to be the ones that are going to go after these food sources, true predatory behavior. So what are some examples of this? Well, the most common example, the most easily recognizable way that people fish topwater for trout is mousing. Now, I have not gone back in the podcast archives, but I have seen on the website, I do have a couple articles about fly fishing using mice. So what is a mouse pattern? A mouse pattern is a fly that looks like a mouse. I have fished deer hair mouse patterns, which are spun deer hair, so they float like a cork. I have fished cork mouse patterns that are painted up to look like a mouse, little eyeballs, cute little nose, ears and whiskers and a tail. And I like to fish personally foam mouse patterns. That they're easy to tie. There's plenty of recipes online and patterns that you can copy, and they can be done with craft foam and with a few simple materials. I mean, aside from the hook, everything that you need to tie a good mouse pattern can be bought at the local craft store. And honestly, you're going to want to tie a bunch of them, because the best way to fish these is with a heavy rod, because it's not so much that the fly is heavy, although the hook of a size, you know, maybe 2 mouse fly, or a size 4, even a smaller mouse fly, that hook itself is going to weigh more than most of the flies all assembled that you're going to be fishing. So fishing a 6 weight is kind of a minimum, because you want that accuracy to be able to throw that fly well. Because the best way to fish this fly is to throw it right up against a bank, let it sit for a minute, and then start ripping it. If you've ever watched a mouse fall in the water, or a lemming swim across the water on National Geographic, you know that there's an instant moment of panic where they freeze, and then they go fast. And then if a mouse senses a predator, they're going to go still. And sometimes that's the moment when that fish comes up and says, "No more, you are now my meal." So casting that thing against the bank is another reason why I like using heavier rod, because there's sometimes a chance that I'm going to get hung up. And if I get hung up, I don't want to compromise my rod tip when I have to snap that thing off, which a little bit of a side note, always do by pointing your rod tip at the snag. Don't jerk it back like you're setting the hook really hard. That's the best way to break a fly rod. There's better ways to break a fly rod, but it's an easy way to break a fly rod. I'll put it that way. So point your rod tip at your fly and then pull that line with your other hand, and that will cause the break to happen at a knot, not at the rod tip or the fly line itself. But that's another reason why I have multiple mouse patterns in my box at any point in time, because I'm throwing it up against logs, I'm throwing it up against brush, I'm throwing it up against the stream bank, and I'm letting it sit, and then I'm twitch, maybe ripping it back, twitch, and casting over those undercut banks or in those deep holes where those fish may be hiding. When do I like to fish mice? I like to fish mice late in the day, early in the day. I like to fish mice at night. There have been some spectacular evenings with a headlamp, and you're casting, trying to just sense what's happening in the water, and you hear that eruption, you give it a pause, and then you set the hook, and can get into some really big fish that way. But again, like to use maybe a 6-weight rod, a 7-weight rod, even an 8-weight rod, because again, it's the bigger fly line, it is the heavier, more air resistant flies that you're throwing, and all sorts of fish are going to go after mice. I have caught rainbows, browns, and brook trout all on mouse patterns. And you can change up those patterns depending on where you're fishing. Sometimes I like using a more finesse mouse pattern where the front of that fly is smooth, and I impart all the action through how I strip that fly in. And sometimes I like to use a mouse pattern that has more of a cup face, or a face that is like the opposite of a diving fly. So instead of like a lip that makes that fly go down, it's actually a lip that makes that fly push water and really create a disturbance. And then I can fish it with a lot of water moving, or I can fish it with just a little bit of water moving. But that is probably the most exciting topwater presentation for fishing for trout. So if trout go after mouse flies, what else will they go after that's on the surface? And there's two other ways that I've caught trout on topwater flies that I want to talk about. Actually, three. Well, let's do three. Okay. One is actually a very similar tactic to a mouse pattern, and that is with a popper. I have caught I've caught fish on bass poppers. I've caught trout on little panfish poppers. And what's the reason for that? Well, they think it is a struggling something. You think of some of the flies that trout will pursue. They don't look like anything. They don't look like bugs. They don't look like fish. They don't look like terrestrial insects. And still, they will go after them. Well, where do fish eat? Fish eat off the bottom. Fish eat top to bottom in the water column. And because we just already established, they will go after mice and they will go after dry flies. They will fish off the surface. And so I don't know what they think it is. It could be a struggling bait fish. It could be a terrestrial. And I think probably more often than not, with a slow twitched popper, that's probably what they think it is. They will pursue a popper on the surface. Now, is this a super productive, high chance way to present flies to trout? It's not. But there's been times where there's been undercut banks, and I've wanted something that disturbs a little bit more water and gets a little bit more attention than I can give with a different kind of topwater presentation or a dry fly. And so I will use a cup-faced popper. Because so number one is mice, number two is poppers. And let me explain why. Because number three is hoppers. I mean, it could be hoppers, it could be crickets, any big terrestrial. You generally speaking, something that's tied with a lot of foam in it. You know, a lot of times a dead drift is a very, very productive way to fish these patterns, especially because if you've ever watched a grasshopper that falls in the water, they will make their way over to the side, but then every once in a while they'll stop, and either because they're waterlogged or because they sense danger. I don't know what happens in the mind of a grasshopper, right? But they will oftentimes do a dead drift with a little bit of movement that gets in there. And I'll get more to hoppers there in a second, but going back to the popper, if I want to cast a hopper in a place where I want to generate more movement in the water, I will use a cup-faced panfish popper. Because when that fish looks up, they're essentially seeing the same profile. It is that little cupped cork or foam head with a little bit of a trail of feathers behind it and then some legs sticking off of it. I can't imagine that a fish that is responding to a surface disturbance that is already keyed in on fishing or eating hoppers is going to be super discerning if it's striking out of aggression, anger, predatory response, whatever it may be. They're not taking the time to slowly go up and slurp. And so I'm totally fine with throwing that little cup-faced panfish popper under those weeds or behind the limbs and things like that, and then popping it back because it gets a little bit more surface disturbance. So I will fish that way, and I anticipate that that is what they are assuming that the fish is going after, the fish is assuming they're going after is a hopper. Now, that being said, I know folks that have fished big tailwaters who have used poppers or even almost like slider style patterns, because the fish that come through the turbine, like the bait fish that come through the turbines of those dams, they are so disoriented and dying that they are jerking around on the surface, that their innards are all messed up. And they're really relatively sad if you feel remorse for bait fish. but they're kind of skittered around on the surface. And so they'll fish like slider patterns, imitating those bait fish that have come through the turbines, and big trout will go for those. I've never done it, but I've seen guys talk about doing it. So heard guys talk about doing it. That's what you would say. So first thing is mice. Second thing is poppers. Third thing is hoppers. So hopper fishing, as I already alluded, is a great way to catch midsummer and late summer trout. Places like spring creeks, for example, where you're often having to be incredibly delicate and very finesse, you can throw a hopper and you have this giant chunky fly that you want to land with a splat, and that although fishing with a dead drift is very, very effective, imparting a little bit of action is very, very helpful too. Now, one of the ways that I like to make sure I am fishing hoppers when I'm still trying to maintain a relatively finesse presentation, so on something like a spring creek, is I will, instead of using that fly line to impart action, which generally speaking makes that fly move directly laterally on the surface of the water, or sometimes because of a little bit of surface tension that's being created by the leader and the tip of the fly line, it will actually cause it to dip down. I like to use my rod tip, because you watch how a grasshopper moves, and it's almost a breaststroke style movement. So it's not necessarily moving down in the water column like a frog does as it moves across the surface of the water, which trout eat frogs too. But anyway, the hopper kind of moves laterally across. So I will use my rod tip to make little gentle sweeps. Now, there's a very good chance that if you get an aggressive strike by a big trout, that you're not going to have your line hand and your rod tip totally synced up so that you can get a nice solid hook set. But even with that said, it doesn't take that much more effort to, as you move your rod tip, to pull in the slack of that fly line and then quickly hook it around that index finger that you're using to hold your rod. So just like you would if you were stripping in a streamer, you are pulling in that slack line with your line hand, and then you are pinching up the slack with the index finger, if that's the finger you probably use, to your cork or to the butt of your fly rod right above the cork. And then you're drawing that line hand up to grab that line where there's tension just below your finger, and repeating that process. I like to do the same thing when I am imparting motion with my rod tip, because then you're inserting a lot more slack, and almost by default, you're moving your rod tip further away from that fly, so that when you go to make that hook set, you have a shorter arc to impart on that fish. And you know, we're not jerking our rods from, like, you know, 3 o'clock to 9 o'clock like you're, you know, a professional bass angler, but you do, you know, that foot can really matter when it comes to getting a good hook set on a fish, especially with a larger fly. That can be really, really helpful. So that is what I like to do when I'm imparting a little bit of action on a hopper, is use my rod tip to draw it in those strokes like you see an actual grasshopper make. But again, I'm not opposed to jerking it and making it pop around a lot if I think that is going to be the ticket for a more aggressive strike, depending on where I am. If the water's a little bit choppy, or if I've seen that fish chase after hoppers that are splatting. But man, that splat, that's the way to really get their attention, is that initial cast. So anyway, mice, poppers, hoppers, and lastly, both because we're coming leaving time, and this is probably the last thing I've done, and that's skating flies. So how do you skate flies? Well, there's flies that are especially designed for skating, and I'm not going to go into too much detail because there's a lot of history about, say, spider flies and other skating flies that are designed specifically for this. And there's a whole lot of technique that goes into it, and like I said, some fun history, and I don't have that at the front of my brain. It's kind of back there, and I have to spend some time jumbling through words to really articulate it well. But also because it is a specialized fly pattern. But you can do this with caddisflies is the best way to do it. Now, certainly you could use mayflies, and you could use it with stoneflies. But generally speaking, the flies that are going to be the actual flies, the insects themselves that are going to be skittering around more than others, in my experience and from experience of people that have fished much longer than me, are caddisflies. And so how do you skate the caddisfly? Well, this is done not that different than what I was just talking about with gently pulling hoppers across the surface of the water. It's about making that cast and then making sure that you have very little, if any, fly line on, and even leader on the surface of the water, and then sweeping that rod a few feet to allow that caddisfly to skip across the surface of the water. A few things need to happen. One, this needs to be a caddisfly that has a good hackled body. So this cannot be a body that is super exposed. It needs to have a good hackle on it. And especially if the forefront of it has that spun hair creates a buoyancy, because hair is going to float better than feathers all the time. It's also going to allow the rigid tips and buoyant materials of that hair is going to allow it to skip really, really well across the surface. Make sure that thing is lubed up with all sorts of floatant, keep it dry, and then you can allow it to skip and hop. Sometimes it will legitimately skate across the surface. Other times it will hop. Both are things you can see caddisflies do in nature, and both kind of things can elicit strikes from trout. It's in the same vein that sometimes as you are making the you're pulling in your line to make your cast of your nymph, and what you're effectively doing is having that nymph rise from wherever it was in the water column that you were fishing it on its drift up to the surface. And what that is doing is either incidentally or on purpose, it is emulating that nymph rising up in the water column as it goes to shed its husk and go to its next stage of being a little bit more of a realized bug. You're doing that similarly with a dry fly skidding across the top. You are moving a fly in a natural way, not a dead drift, but a natural way, and it causes fish to attack because they again, whatever they recognize in their brain, they're seeing this as a bug that is trying to get away. And fish sometimes get all excited about that. The chase is better than the catch, right? They're like the fly that's playing hard to get. Now, some fish might be completely freaked out by this because they notice that there's something unnatural happening. They see your fly line dragging across the water. But this is best done at relatively shorter lengths, or if the water is very fast and you can lift your rod both up in away from your body and also draw your rod tip back while at the same time pulling some of that slack with your line hand, and then making any slight adjustments with the tip of your rod, mending that line to allow that caddisfly or whatever dry fly you're using to skip across the surface. A great way to start with this is with a fully palmered fly, or with a fully hackled fly. Even something like a stimulator would be a great pattern to kind of test this out on, something big and bushy with a couple of different materials. But you will get strikes this way, and you'll get it in some of the most confounding places, the places where you thought you had to have that perfectly matched hatch, the incredibly gentle dead drift, especially as the hatch is maybe just coming on and those fish are keying in. This is a great thing to try. So you can fish topwater trout. You can use mice, you can use poppers, you can use hoppers, and you can use dry flies like caddisflies and other attractor patterns to skate, and you can catch all sorts of fish. So have you integrated these tactics into your toolbox? They are a great thing to turn to if you're not catching fish, and they're a great thing to turn to if you want to see if you can drum up maybe a bigger fish, maybe a more aggressive fish, or maybe even a fish that you've been targeting and it's already going after dry flies, but you want to present something a little bit different because for some reason, for whatever reason, your fly is not able to compete with the natural. So you're going to get a little bit more panache and see what comes of it. So that is a topwater fly fishing for trout primer. There's more to be said, but as always, hopefully you go and find that information yourself or you let me know. This week's article is on castingacross.com. Monday's was called No Water In with Whitewater's Great Lakes Pro Jacket. So I own a couple of wading jackets, a couple from fly fishing companies, and now I have a legitimate fishing rain jacket that is not from a fly fishing company, but that I think is probably poised to maybe my favorite. And some of that has to do with the fact that Whitewater, which is a kind of a conventional angling company, although I'm sure they would not say that they have positioned themselves to not be a fly fishing company. They have a rain jacket. It's actually part of an entire rainwear system that they have that they've designed for people who are out on boats, who are fishing in nasty weather, who may be very, very far from their truck in the boat dock when that nasty weather sets in. So whether they want to continue to fish or they need to motor back at relatively high speed to the boat dock, they need a jacket that is going to keep them and their stuff dry. So a few quick things that I like about this jacket. You can read more of the review. I like that it's comfortable. It is not super baggy. I take a medium, and a medium fits me well. It's a little bit more trim fit than some of the wading jackets I have. I could still fit a puff layer underneath it or a fleece underneath it, and I'd be fine. The zippers are waterproof, both the pocket zippers as well as the chest zipper. That is a huge thing for me, because if I am fishing with rain gear, I'm not going to have all of my vest or sling pack or stuff maybe on hand. And so I need some pockets that are going to keep things dry. And lastly, the hood is great. Poorly made hoods drive me nuts. And you've probably heard me talk about this in other reviews, just because if I want a hood on, I don't want to hear as I turn my head around. Hopefully that wasn't triggering to you. This is a really good hood. It kept my hat totally dry on a really, really rainy day a couple days ago, which, again, is that a big deal? No, but that means that the water is not getting on my sunglasses, which I wear yellow lenses all the time. And so that meant I could keep my amber lenses on and my hat and my head stayed dry. So more information on the Whitewater Great Lakes Pro Jacket over at castingcross.com. Wednesday's article is called Word on the Stream Is, and all this is one more of my recommendations to have conversations, to talk to people in fly shops, to talk to people on the stream, to talk to guides, talk to lodge proprietors, to talk to even local business owners. The amount of information that exists that is not cataloged on the internet is still staggering, believe it or not. And the best way to find this is by actually talking to people. So that's my encouragement. Do that. Talk to people. Learn things. It's never going to hurt. This week's recommendation on the podcast picks up on that night fishing thing that I mentioned earlier. And if you're going to be fishing at night, my recommendation is that you don't use your headlamp a lot. Yeah, you get your eyes acclimated to the moonlight and whatever is out there, and you're going to be able to see a lot more. But you're going to need that headlamp to tie on new flies, to get your way out, and you don't want a headlamp that is going to fail on you. That is a bad thing. It happened to me a couple times in my life, and I never liked it, all right? So my headlamp that I've turned to both for early morning decoy setups, for fishing or for fishing for ducks, for hunting for ducks, as well as finding my way out of the stream after I've been fishing late into the evening, is from the good folks over at Black Diamond, and it is the Storm 500R rechargeable headlamp. And it is a premium headlamp. I mean, they come way more expensive than this. It's, I think, retails around $75. Probably can find it on sale at your local outdoor store. But it gives you every feature you want: variable light conditions, a programmable light conditions, red light, other colors of light as well. And it lasts a long time, and it is waterproof. I think it can last for something like 12 hours. I can't remember. And I'm actually on their website right now, and I'm not seeing it. But all I know is that I only charged a few times over duck season. Here it goes. It says on low 350 hours. There you go. So yeah, I use it on medium. It says 7 hours for high. So yeah, over the entirety of duck season, I think I charged it one time, and then I just recharged it in anticipation of going fishing at nighttime. So I'll put a link to Black Diamond Storm 500R rechargeable headlamp. They have a few models that are similar, that are a little bit less feature heavy, that are less expensive if that's what you want. So you can check those out too. Thanks for listening to the Casting Across Fly Fishing podcast. Please subscribe in your favorite podcast app and rate the podcast in iTunes. Then head over to castingacross.com for 3 posts a week on the people, places, and things that go into the pursuit of fish.